The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Handler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark Sigmund is not with us this week. He's on vacation, but Mark Willig is our good buddy. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Gary.
Good. What's new in recovery news?
Well, I pulled this article because, you know, I'm a little upset, like other people are, about the legalization of the marijuana recreational use. So this is about the customers lining up before dawn at Rice Patterson, a marijuana dispensary in New Jersey that was welcoming customers with free donuts. Okay, so Jersey kicked off legalized sales of recreational marijuana on Thursday. Rice, along with roughly a dozen other medical marijuanas dispensaries across the state, opened its doors for the first time, ages 21 and older. I am just so excited that everything is finally opened up and legal, says a 23-year-old of Union City, who was the first person in line at 3:30 a.m.
Okay, well, look, we're probably in the minority. We're like, somebody doesn't smoke anymore and doesn't want to smell cigarette smoke. Look, it's the way it's what it is. There's going to be abuse. It's not a perfect system. And, I know it's a challenge of some sort to the recovery community because it is a big temptation. And everybody can, rationalize that it's legal. So it's not, you're not doing anything wrong. But it's a problem. What else you have?
Well, the following states and territories have passed laws allowing for personal possession and consumption of cannabis by adults. Generally, this means a policy that supports a legally controlled market for marijuana where consumers can buy it for personal use from a safe legal source. The states are Alaska, District of Columbia, Maine, Montana, New Mexico, Vermont, Arizona, Colorado, Guam, Massachusetts, Nevada, New York, Virginia, California, Connecticut, Illinois, Michigan, New Jersey, Oregon, and the state of Washington.
Okay, so what's your take on this?
My take as a recovering addict is, some people, they say, marijuana is a gateway to addiction. And some people, it was a gateway to addiction. So they've been sober. They've been clean for a few minutes or so. Now they see that there's legalized marijuana. So if the trash marijuana that they were smoking 15 years ago had them jump into other drugs.
Okay, but I got to jump in here. I don't think that this legalization of marijuana, it's going to affect some people, but I don't think I really don't believe that it that people are now going to become drug addicts because this is legalized. But we can talk more about it. Listen, when we come back, our special guest, Rob Reed, who is the Executive Deputy Attorney General for Special Initiatives for the state of Pennsylvania, is our guest. And when we come back, you can talk to one of the top lawmen in the state of Pennsylvania. So it's really going to be a great show. And we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campus in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY today.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Heard on these great radio stations across America, WWDB out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, KDWN out of Las Vegas, Nevada, WHFS out of Tampa, Florida, and WGAC out of Augusta, Georgia. Rob Reed, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Gary.
It's so, always great to see you, man.
Yes.
You know that?
It's been too long.
I'm in awe of you.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
No. Let me tell you something. Listen. I think the issue is with me is I was thrown out of two law schools, okay? You're a prominent attorney, and you're in the attorney general's office. So I have complete respect for you. And the other great thing about you, you're a regular guy. So I love it.
Thank you.
So what's doing in the world of the attorney general's office?
Well – we are starting to open up like many agencies around the state, and which is a good thing, although I've spent 2 years kind of working out of my home. In some ways, I was more efficient because I do go all over the state and I give presentations all over the state on a variety of issues. But so it certainly saved a lot of wear and tear on my car and my body. Being the young person that I am.
Yes, you are.
Yes, very young. So, but today, I was in Reading and I spoke for 4 hours. Just poof, you know, that's what I do. And but it's really, you get that sense of when you're with somebody.
Yeah.
You see their reaction. You see if they're, oh, this is Rob, I'm incredibly bored. Or you see, you know, this is, you know, wow, I get it. And
yeah.
You can see if people are really listening.
So I know that you're a proponent and you're outspoken on the idea of trauma plays a big part in addiction. Correct? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is based on, I think you know that before I came to the AG's office, I was with the United States Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office for almost 35 years. So that means that I'm really old. But I have seen a lot of stuff in the course of my career, a lot of tragedies, a lot of horrible things that people have done to other people and to themselves.
Yeah.
And I've seen the destruction of families. And I always wanted to figure out, you know, we're talking about crime prevention or, you know, how to reduce this crime. But I think it has to begin with this idea of understanding what is motivating people, what is the underlying cause of why so many people do what they do. And I do believe it relates back to trauma.
Trauma. Mark, you know, I was thinking about this exact thing that Rob was talking about. I was talking to my wife about it. The easiest answer for me is we just wanted to feel good, okay? We didn't think about was there really any trauma. At least I never did. It was we wanted to escape. Now, as Rob said, what were we escaping from? There had to be something that was bad.
Ourselves. That's what we were escaping
but
from.
What made us feel like we had to feel better. What was going on that was so terrible for us growing up? I mean,
well, recovery is the answer, but I want to know what the question is, you know?
Well, is the question is, before you started using and maybe abusing drugs, what got you into the drugs is the question.
You know, a lot of it was peer pressure, and then people looked at me and wanted to be like me because I was the cool one, and then people stopped hanging around me because I was not the cool one. And that's, you know, and I decided to take up, you know, family recovery because 4 out of 5 families suffer from addiction. So,
you know, if I look back, Rob, I, you know, I can say there was no trauma in my life. But if I really look back, I remember being very self-aware of how I looked, which I didn't like for a lot of reasons. And in my house, there was no abuse, but there was always no. That was my father's first reaction. No, no, no. So I went out and stole whatever I had to get. So that the feeling of, you know, no confidence in me, you know, it is trauma. There is trauma with everybody,
right?
Whether they can bring it back up or they can't. You know, if it wasn't trauma and if it wasn't we wanted to escape so much, we would get high and then not get high. But as addicts with trauma, it's a deadly combination.
Yeah. Well, for so many people, you know, you look at the statistics that are out there and the numbers of people who have died by suicide over the last decade, the number of people who have died by suicide in the last couple of years, and we have less concrete numbers on how many people self-harm. But we do know, what was it, 46,000 people died by overdose. And so why does someone get to that point? I understand that addiction is a disease and, you know, it will take its toll. But the question is, was there abuse, neglect? What was going on in the home? Was there domestic violence? Was there mental illness? Was there addiction in the family?
Yeah.
And so there's lots of questions about what was happening in the family. And what we understand based on all the studies, and there have been 2,000 of them, but that so many of the people who are now in America, who are, we even say, you know, the original ACEs study, which is the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, involved 17,500 people in Southern California who were mostly white, mostly college educated, and mostly middle class. And yet 61% of them had at least one adverse childhood experience.
Very interesting. Hey, if you're just joining us now, our guest is Rob Reed, Executive Deputy Attorney General for Special Initiatives for the State of Pennsylvania. And if you want to listen and watch our show each week, we are live 3 o'clock Friday afternoons Eastern Standard Time. And go to Facebook, to our Facebook page, Clean and Sober Radio. Just like these viewers, Elizabeth Marchant, Patty Weeks, Nolan Burchette, Laura Story, Betsy Kalis, Stephanie DePaul, Rich Rosenbaum. Hi, Gary. Just a comment. If you're in a 12-step fellowship, this is a non-issue. Smoking marijuana is not an option. Narcotics Anonymous says any mind or mood-altering substances. Great show. Well, hey, Rich, everybody's got an opinion. I value yours, and I think I agreed with that.
Yeah, I mean, the opinion of this station and of all three of us doesn't matter. We're just, you know, it doesn't go on the station. It's just between all of us. And I had something tragic happen to me this week. I found out that my son, who I haven't spoken to in over 10 years, got married, and I saw it on the internet. And listen, if it was 20 years ago, I would have used because I was so upset. And not 20, like 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is what it is.
That's traumatic. That's traumatic, you know. Rob, tell us about your background. How did you get to where, I mean, listen, you've really accomplished a lot. So we would like to know how you got to – I'll tell you one way you got there. You weren't an addict. That's one way you got there. Tell us about your background, Rob.
Well, so I had very early on decided I wanted to do public service. And maybe it's because I'm a child of the 60s, but although born in the 50s, but I really believed in public service. And I felt like, and this is in honor to my father in particular, who was a poor kid from Brooklyn, who felt like he had to work his tail off just to get out of poverty. But he gave me a middle-class life, and I said, well, now it's my – I have the opportunity to give back. And that's just who I am. So law school seemed like a natural step. And then I was very fortunate to go to the U.S. Attorney's Office, which, you know, I felt like doing justice was what I was trying to do. I'm not – you know, I think we tried. We worked very hard. I was just on with a friend of mine who's now my brother-in-law. And we tried really hard to do the right thing. We believed in evidence and facts, and we followed them where they went. But one of the things that I also wanted to do was be exposed to what's going on in the world that was outside of my little cocoon of safety that I was brought up in. And I quickly saw it, and I saw the violence. I saw the crime. I saw the despair. I saw the hopelessness. And I've always been trying to help people. I mean, this has been a motivating thing for me. So whether when I was a federal prosecutor, it was trying to help victims of crime, but by at the same time being decent and humane to the people we charged. It was 2010, after many years of, you know, really running and supervising and handling criminal cases, federal criminal cases, that I was introduced to this idea of to trauma and trauma-informed approaches. And there was a program at Drexel University called Healing Hurt People. And the people who ran it, well, there was the whole group, but it was John Rich and Ted Corbin. They were doctors, and Linda Rich. Amazing people. And they gave me a presentation about trauma. And I got to tell you, it was like the old Ford commercial in the 60s. It was like a light bulb went off, and I said, I get it. And I immediately – and because it said, you know, we have to really understand what's going on, the underlying causes of how people get to where they go. And they make good decisions or they make terrible decisions.
So your attitude – let me ask you, as a prosecutor, if you think back to when you were a prosecutor and now when you think back – when you think of what you do now – It's sort of a 180. I mean, you went after bad people, but you went after bad people. Was there any thought about why they were bad people?
So I always thought that.
Okay.
But let me say that one changes. I don't think that it was a 180. I think that what – because I'm actually speaking across the state to people in law enforcement and criminal justice about how to be trauma-informed. I think you can be appropriate and aggressive in prosecuting people who harm other people. And I think that, that goes without saying. We cannot allow people to harm other people.
Yeah.
And there have to be appropriate consequences for people to do that. On the other hand, we shouldn't be re-traumatizing people in the process. And so one of the things – so I would say the one thing I would take issue with what you said is that, you know, yes, the people that I prosecuted did bad things. Were they inherently bad people? See, that's the switch. No, I wouldn't say they're bad people. And matter of fact, I have worked with so many different people. I oversee something called the Pennsylvania Reentry Council. And so I work with people across the state who are trying to help people returning from prisons and jails. And so many of the people I've learned have great humanity, and they want to be good people, and many are good people. Some, for a whole bunch of reasons, went down a path that got them into all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, I guess I should have clarified what I said.
It's okay.
I was actually thinking my mind goes to the addict.
Yes.
And you know, the addicts have to, I believe, must be treated differently than the dealers. I mean, there's no question. And so I should have clarified it and, you know, talked about – I don't know if you prosecuted users. But I think generally the attitude in the legal community has changed, hopefully, that we can't incarcerate out of this addiction situation in the country, but we do need treatment. Are you feeling that? I know that our Attorney General Josh Shapiro has that mindset that we need treatment.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And I mean, that's what the whole trauma-informed approach is, that we're trying to say, let's use the best. We have limited resources, but many of the people that find themselves in the criminal justice system, substantially more than 50%, have a history of mental illness or a history of addiction, substance abuse, or both. And so we have to figure out ways to help people much earlier than waiting for them to get sentenced and then go to jail and be on probation and parole where they can be helped. So absolutely, treatment is really where we need to go. And I'll, if you have a minute, I can explain what we're doing on the statewide level.
I do have a – we have a minute. Yeah. I'm always watching the clock.
Okay, good. You have a minute?
Because I got somebody who's going to yell at me if I don't.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
so
sure, go ahead.
So I am part of an effort to create a trauma-informed Pennsylvania. I'll explain what that is in a minute. But the bottom line was, since 2017 – I have been traveling around the state, meeting with people, all sorts of different people, hundreds, thousands of people, to talk about bringing people together across systems, human services, health, education, criminal justice, to say we need to understand what trauma is and what trauma-informed responses to things like addiction and crime and some of the other things like that. So in 2019, Governor Wolf created an Office of Advocacy and Reform. And I was part of a think tank that came up with a report. I was with 25 people. We created a report that came out in July of 2020, laying the foundation, the baseline, the real foundation to create a trauma-informed state. Since then, I've been overseeing something called the Criminal Justice Action Team. We are trying to create what's called a trauma-informed criminal justice system. What does that mean? That means that, yes, you go and you prosecute people and you do it fairly and you do it without re-triggering people. You do it justly and humanely. But the whole idea is you understand that there are many people who have been harmed by trauma, they've been injured by trauma, and they need help.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about that. You know, you're doing such great work. And, we wouldn't have been having this conversation 20 years ago, Mark, with Rob. That's for sure. Hey, for just joining us now, we're talking with Robert K. Reed, Executive Deputy Attorney General for Special Initiatives for our state of Pennsylvania. And, you know, if you want to listen and watch us do the show live at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard, go to Facebook. Go to our page, Clean and Sober Radio, just like some of these great viewers that we have. Just like some of these great viewers we have. C. Ruger, Zachary Cooper, our expert on DUI situations, attorney Zach Cooper, Keith Hornog, Jamie Huth, Brian Martin, Kenny Willig. Is that name familiar to you? Guys, great show, calling from South Florida. Hey, listen, when you check in with us, if you could tell us where you're checking in with us, that would be absolutely fabulous, okay? So listen, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, give us a call at 1-888-329-3306 and talk to Deputy Attorney General Robert Reed. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
Hi, this is Butch Patrick. That's right, TV's Eddie Munster, and everything is better with Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're back. Clean and Sober Radio, 1-888-329-3306. 800-300-3306. Give us a call. We're talking with Deputy Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Robert Reed. And I can safely say that Rob is a friend of the recovery community and does a lot of great work for us. So thanks for your service, Rob.
Thank you. Thank you.
So tell us, give us some more.
So, you know, I was talking about so we're talking about the relationship between trauma and addiction, which means that there are many people, not everybody, but many, many, many people, a high percentage of people who have experienced addiction, who suffer from addiction, have had a history of trauma. And this is now pretty well documented. As a matter of fact, there's – I talked about this – there was this study in the 1990s called the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Experiences. But they said if you had four or more adverse childhood experiences, let's say you were abused or neglected or there was mental illness in your family or something like that, if you had four or more, you were seven times more likely to suffer from alcoholism.
Yeah.
And you were 10 times more likely to be an intravenous drug user. So think about that. And 12 times more likely to at least to attempt suicide. So these are some pretty basic studies, and this has been confirmed in 2,000 studies over the 20 years or 25
right.
years.
Right. Mark, we're both sitting here. You mentioned something about the wedding. That's traumatic. Can you go back into your history and I, if it's too personal, you have to say it, but did you have a life – I'm not necessarily saying a life of trauma, but were there a lot – were there trauma incidences in your family growing up?
Okay, yes, there were. I had a cousin who was a heroin addict, and he got clean, and he made a real success out of himself. The biggest trauma was my father was also a poor boy from Brooklyn and lived in West Philly when they moved here, and he passed away in 1974 at the age of 46. And he passed away on my brother's 10th birthday.
Well, that's traumatic in itself.
Of course. Think about every time it's my brother's birthday, how he thinks.
Well, I always think about what it would feel like to be older than your parent ever was.
Right, right, right. My mother died. She was 69. My father was 46. But the thing is, when I was using, you know, right after my father had passed, my mother just thought I was nuts, and she dropped me off at Philadelphia Psychiatric, you know, hospital. And I needed to go to rehab. I didn't need to go there. It was horrifying.
Well, what year was this?
77.
Well, the thought of rehab, was that even in your – it wasn't in my parents' vocabulary. I mean
– No, it's not. It wasn't.
You got problems. You're sick. You need to get help.
Right, right. There's a lot of we call co-occurring disorders, and I think a lot of addicts went through that.
And if I could just jump
Please
in
do.
Here, so you know, as somebody who spent you know 35 years you know in the courtroom, and around the courtroom. You would have somebody who would come into court. They were arrested. They were indicted on some case. They come in. Their lawyer says he's got a drug problem. He's suffering from addiction to whatever it was. And so the judge would say, okay, send him away for 28 days to Kintock or something yeah. like that. And presumably the belief was at this point that, okay, you go 28 days and you detox and you move on with your life. And if you screw up at that point, it's really on you. As if nobody even heard the word relapse. But the bottom line is that they didn't even consider the fact that there was a mental illness or trauma yeah. underpinning to why that person was using drugs. So it can't just be detox. It has to be both. And that gets into the whole co-occurring thing. You need to have both. You have to have the warm handoff. Yes, you've got to detox. But you also have to deal with the issues that brought you to that point of trying to oftentimes deal with your pain by dealing with drugs or alcohol.
You know, I remember when I went to rehab in 1982, I was in a section for addicts, and then there was another section for mental illness. But they never got together. And I don't know when that finally set a light bulb off in the medical community, but it has come together, and people, you know, like yourself, Rob, have recognized that it is mental illness and addiction go hand in hand, and trauma and addiction go hand in hand, and I'm sure a lot of other things go hand in hand with addiction. And I was just, you know, I'm thinking, you know, people can deny that they've had trauma, whether it's conscious or subconsciously, because they might not know they had trauma, right? And it's just like somebody denying that they have a drug or alcohol problem, because, you know, for whatever reasons. So there's a lot of denial in this.
And there's such a stigma about mental illness and drug abuse.
Yeah.
So people don't want to admit to it. This is an interesting statistic. Remember I said if you had four or more adverse childhood experiences, you were seven times more likely to be an alcoholic. Probabilities. And then 10 times more likely to be an intravenous drug user. Do you know that the Buffalo Police Department, Buffalo, New York, a professor at University of Buffalo did a study of Buffalo police officers and found out that the rate of police officers in the Buffalo Police Department who had four more ACEs or adverse childhood experiences was higher than the general population. In other words, they're police officers who are, you know, walking the streets of Buffalo who have had even more of an exposure to trauma than the general population. What does that mean? That means that they have suffered, let's say, abuse or neglect. They have, again, had mental illness in their family. Somebody in their family has been incarcerated. There's domestic abuse. There was a bunch of things that may have happened in their homes that impacted their life. Now, maybe those officers had some other person in their life who was really totally loving and caring for them. So they were able to be more resilient.
Is there any correlation between these police officers and what they went through and the employment that they chose?
You know, that I would love to be able to say, but it may also be, you know, look, wonder about that. I don't have the answer, but I do think, but it does raise some questions. You know, again, that means that people who are doing any of our jobs have experienced adverse childhood experiences. One of the things I do when I go out and speak is to show or try to present how commonplace or how trauma impacts such a large swath of our population. I mean, for example, Ukraine, just use everyone is traumatized. Yeah. But in the United States, think about it. What do we've lost 500,000 people to, I don't even know what the number is, it's over a million people.
Yes.
More than a million people who've died COVID. Now of COVID.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so think about what that has done to so many families and individuals. For many people, it's sad and it's unfortunate they got sick. But for many people, it was traumatic. If they had underlying trauma histories, that could have been triggering. Just like, as you said, if you hadn't gotten together, you know, over the last 20, 25 years, what you heard about with your son might have been really triggering for you.
Right, right. And it wasn't. Acceptance is something that I believe in greatly. You have to accept it.
Yeah. If you're just joining us now, Mark Willig and I are speaking with Robert Reed, who is the Deputy Attorney General for Special Initiatives for the state of Pennsylvania. And if you want to listen and watch us do this show, because sometimes it can get crazy, but it's fun to watch, at 3 p.m. every Friday, Eastern Standard, go to Facebook and to our page, Clean and Sober Radio. Just like these great viewers we have today, Mimi Dorshu, Judge Andrea Duffy, our favorite judge, Frank Brightman. So That's the story. You know, Rob, I'm just wondering, can anybody honestly say they've had no trauma in their life?
You know, I mean, based on the definition of trauma, yes. I imagine you can, you know. However, we've all been impacted by adversity.
Yeah.
And whether adversity tips into trauma, look, that's beyond my intelligence. But the bottom line is dealing with just the large number of people who have been impacted by trauma, it can be devastating. And then when you think about what happens when people have experienced trauma, they start trying to self-medicate by using drugs or alcohol. They get involved in the criminal justice system. And the criminal justice system says, well, we're really going to deal with that stuff at the end. So we're not going to be able to do anything until you get into prison, and then maybe probation and parole. And then if you screw up because you're an addict and you start using marijuana or whatever the drugs are, cocaine or whatever, you go back to jail. And so there's this revolving thing. But people have not, until recently, have not been taking a look at that there's this underlying issue of trauma.
Right, because there's still the stigma. I mean, a relapse happens. Thank God it didn't happen to me. And it's very negatively viewed. But if you have cancer and it comes back, nobody says, that's your fault.
Yeah, right.
So the stigma is absolutely still there. I think it's getting better. I think the whole thing is getting better. The legal system.
Yeah, the thing is that we're not prepared for adversity. When adversity happens, we're caught short, and we just don't know what to do when that adversity takes over, and we turn to mind, mood altering things that think that it's going to be taken away.
Well, it is for a while. I can tell you that. It was all good until it wasn't.
Right.
Right?
I was going to add that there's, and I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but I'm very concerned about this generation coming up. And I mean, on the one hand, I hope that they solve all of our world's problems because, God, we need help. But the bottom line is if the Pennsylvania Youth Survey, which they do every 2 years, surveys kids in various grades. Yeah. And they shows that this very high percentage, and I'm talking about, 30%, 35% say that they're depressed all the time, and that they're thinking about suicide or self-harm, things like this. And then there's this Safe to Say program, which was instituted. It was as a result of the legislature saying we need to do something after the Stoneman Douglas shootings in 2018. The AG's office now is in charge and did a great job in going around the state and educating all educators, school districts, and police about what to do if there's a threat against the school. So they set up this hotline. So people now know they can call this hotline if someone's threatening the school. The interesting thing is that in the 80,000 calls that have come in since the start of this 3 years ago, of the 80,000, 79% relate to the kids' mental illness, mental health. So that is 79% of the tips coming in on this hotline relate to the children's or the students' mental health. And that includes bullying, depression, anxiety, self-harm, suicidality, drug use. So this is what's going on, and we have to be real that this is happening all across Pennsylvania. It's not like it's just in this one area or that. It's urban,
and
suburban.
And across the country.
Across the country. I'm focused on Pennsylvania, but it's across the country. And so we need to be real about this and say we need to intervene long before people get into the criminal justice system.
Yeah, well, that's so true. Listen, to our viewers and listeners, if you need help, it is out there. Look, call the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP, man. Resources are out there. And as we always say on the show, they don't deliver and there's no drive-thrus. But it is definitely, definitely out there. Let me see what else is going on here.
Well, can I just be positive for a second?
Please, Robert.
I'm sorry. I'm bringing you completely
down. You're bringing us down,
man. I'm sorry.
Blues record.
Well, didn't the Phillies win yesterday or something? Anyway, and then Embiid made that incredible shot at the end of the game. So
what sport is that?
It's hockey.
Hockey.
Yeah, really. So, but, as we're learning more about all of this stuff, there are this incredible group of people. And there are psychiatrists and psychologists and doctors and social workers and all these trauma-informed people who are amazing about being caring and understanding that basic thing that people are injured, people have been wounded, and people need help, rather than saying they're bad, they're awful, put them away in some dungeon. They're saying, let's help them, let's support them, let's get them into treatment. And so people heal all the time. That's the good news.
We definitely recover.
Yes, we do.
You know, it's not talked about enough.
Right.
It's always talked about how many people have overdone. How many people are in recovery? Okay, they say that it is 23 or 25 million people, but those 25 million, the effect that they have on another 100 million.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing.
Well, what do you think is happening to the poor addicts in the Ukraine that are seeking help?
Ooh, good question,
that's tough.
Well, I mean, again, I can't say I have any inside information on Ukraine, but their entire country is in an upheaval. So basic services, I suspect, are not being provided.
Right.
They're, some of the areas have been completely flattened. They're just devastated. So unfortunately, in the way the world works, it seems like the people who, are it most in need are the first to lose whatever supports they should be getting. And so there's only a limited amount of money, resources, funding, energy, and they're going to probably go to help the people who are fighting the war. This is all speculation on my part, but, I think that, look at Kensington here in Philadelphia. I mean, here we're not at war, but yet we've got this entire community where we've got so many people suffering from addiction. And, what are we doing to help them? I know lots being done, but what else can we do so that people don't get to Kensington?
Right.
That's the question, isn't it?
People can use in any neighborhood. Just, the whole Kensington thing. I went to high school in Kensington, and I would carry around with me $1,000 trumpet to school every day without even thinking that somebody was going to take it. I won't even drive through Kensington now.
Let me explain to our listeners and viewers who are not from this area. Kensington is an area of Philadelphia that has been ravaged by addiction, where blocks and blocks of people with substance abuse live out on the street. They inject themselves on the street. They die on the street. And it's beyond comprehension that this society can allow that to continue.
And it's not just Philadelphia.
No.
It's all over Pennsylvania. It's all over the United States.
Yeah.
It is.
You've been to Kensington? Have you driven down there?
Not in a while, but I mean, I like I said, I used to go there every day from in 72, 73, well, 74.
Different world.
And it was totally, totally different. But, I see what we're trying to do with helping people. But, they come up with ideas like they wanted to have this
clean injection sites.
Yeah, the clean injection sites. Never panned out. There were good points and bad points.
Well, because everybody, most people think it's a great idea, but not in my neighborhood.
Right.
That's the issue. And I really believe that I think human nature is, if it really doesn't affect me and my family,
Yeah.
So, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Robert Reed, Deputy Attorney General, State of Pennsylvania. I encourage everybody, give us a call if you're not scared today to call into this radio show, 1-888-329-3306. And when we come back, we're gonna question Rob some more stuff and get some great information from him. We will be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015. And I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, check us out on Facebook right now. Our show started at 3 p.m. this Friday. You can watch us. Go to our page, Clean and Sober Radio, and watch us do the show. It's a lot of fun. We make a lot of mistakes here, and it's fun to watch us try to recover from those mistakes. Right, Mark?
Right. You know? Just have a short. That's easy, fixable.
You have a short?
Yeah, now
short
it's okay.
What? Oh, your headphones.
Short mine, yeah.
I thought you
yeah.
meant in your head. You were yeah. pointing to your
I,
head.
I used to call while I was sitting outside on my porch, and the birds were singing, and Gary always said, is that going on in your head, or are there really birds there?
Well, I think that's a legitimate question, Mark.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Hey, so let's talk about law enforcement and how they relate and what they're doing. I know there's the LEADO program in Pennsylvania, law
yes.
enforcement treatment. What is it, operative? Or?
Well, you know, what they're doing is they're going to various counties. The first one, Somerset.
Yeah.
And
that was your office. That was
that
your,
what?
The Attorney General's
that's,
office.
That's the Attorney General's office. And they're working with police departments to essentially not so much open their doors, but to essentially the police department will say, if you are willing and you're interested in getting treatment for an addiction, we will help expedite you to get – literally facilitate you getting – from the police department into treatment. There's a whole process, but yeah. it's really amazing. And our office has done a really good job.
I guess this is a two-part to this where it's probably difficult to train policemen to switch gears and try to help people. And then there's the other part where people are afraid to go to the police in fear of they're just going to be arrested. So that's the whole program where they're trying to change both sides. One, to have compassion for the addict or the mentally ill, and the other is to have people feel comfortable enough to go to law enforcement and say, I need help.
So that's a good segue. Thank
yeah.
you very
there
much.
You,
you know, you're,
there you go.
He's you've the
probably
best.
Been doing this isn't your first show, I guess.
It's not the first rodeo.
Not the first rodeo. So after George Floyd was killed, this is that segue. After George Floyd was killed, a group of us within the AG's office and also the governor's office came together and he said, what can we do to kind of help, you know, in terms of criminal justice reform, what can we do to help police, help the community? And so the Pennsylvania legislature passed a law that requires now all law enforcement to receive training in trauma-informed care, trauma-informed policing. So I have been very fortunate to have participated in developing the training and actually delivering it to police trainers around the state. So we are really rolling out for the first time ever in Pennsylvania this effort to essentially educate police about what trauma is, again, just what we're talking about, the relationship between trauma and addiction, mm-hmm. and what you can do as a law enforcement official to not re-trigger someone, not to re-traumatize somebody. Again, that doesn't mean that police shouldn't arrest somebody if they've committed a crime. Of course they should. And it's not to say that people won't go to jail, because they will, and they do. But the bottom line is, can we do it in a way that's better than it's been? It also essentially creates a better relationship between police and community, because the police are not seeing the community as them. And ideally, if you train the community, they won't see the police as the other, and that they can work together so that they can actually understand, how can I help? How can I make a difference?
Rob, has the police been receptive to this? The police chiefs, the regular on the beat cops? It's a process to
we're at the very beginning, but there are some chiefs around Pennsylvania, and I'm talking about you know, rural areas, suburban areas, urban areas, who completely get it, who completely get this, and they are saying we are going to change the culture of our departments. And let me tell you something that's really out of the box. The Pennsylvania Department of Corrections houses over almost less than 40,000 people, and you know, and they, and you know that everyone who goes to state prison has committed some kind of felony and requiring a substantial sentence. The acting secretary of corrections, his name is George Little, amazing guy. He and his staff are trying to create a trauma-informed Department of Corrections.
Fantastic.
It is unbelievable. And I was just with him last week, and he spoke to this group, this audience, and he said, in a prison, we are a community. This is not a liberal from wherever. This is the acting secretary of the Department of Corrections saying, we need to learn to live together in a humane, respectful way. And he doesn't call inmates inmates. He calls them residents. And he say, our staff and residents are in a community and they spend more time with each other every day than they spend with their families, especially the residents. Yeah. And so the bottom line is, how can you, again, create a humane environment where we don't re-trigger people within the criminal justice system, within the correctional system, so that when people eventually leave, they're not so re-traumatized or further traumatized that they go back and say, screw this, I'm going to do whatever I got to do, and back to the streets for me.
That is, I hope that goes through. I hope that spreads, because that is so important. I mean,
we're working on it.
Yeah,
we're working.
I know you're working on it. Hey, listen, we have the recovery question of the week, and it's to me and Mark. I don't know if it's to you, Mark, or Mark Sigmund. What gives you the guys, Robert Parker from Tupelo, Mississippi? What gives you guys the I think he wanted to say experience to be able to speak about addiction without an education? Well, let me say this. I'm going to talk first real quick. My education, I am educated, but I also have a street education. And I've been clean for 40 years next month. And so I think I have the resume to speak about it. You too, right, Mark?
Yeah, I'm a certified family recovery specialist. I've been for 10 years, and I used a lot, and I'll be clean 24 years, September 28th. So thank you.
Bravo, my man.
And we've never met. You know, I've never met any of the judges or, you know, I would like to do good in the community. That's all.
Oh, that's great. Listen, we're coming up to the hour. Robert Reed, thank you as usual for giving us a great show. You're such an easy guest, and you are so knowledgeable. And we really thank you for the service that you're doing for our community in the state of Pennsylvania. And remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
And I'm Mark Willig.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberradio.com.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
System tries to bring